Imagine looking at a map, right? Like a map drawn 2,000 years ago.
Okay, yeah.
And you're tracing all these lines that have been drawn and redrawn across centuries.
Right.
But then you suddenly realize you aren't looking at the geography of the ancient world at all.
Oh, wow.
You're actually looking at a blueprint of your own brain, like the exact wiring of your own consciousness.
Which is just, I mean, taking a relic of external history and realizing it's actually an intimate internal operating manual that completely shifts how a person interacts with the whole concept of faith. You know, you are no longer navigating the past, you're navigating yourself.
Exactly. And welcome to this deep dive, because if you are joining us today, it means you have that that curiosity to look past the surface of inherited traditions.
Yeah, the drive to dig a little deeper.
Right. So today, we are opening a stack of sources that will, frankly, radically reframe a concept you've probably encountered countless times.
Countless.
We are examining the work of Ninoc Santulihau, who is this brilliant Filipino writer and thinker. And our primary materials today are his 2025 book, The Triune Reflection, The Eternal Frequency of the Soul, and also his personal reflective essay, which is called The Weight of Wisdom and the Maturity of Faith.
And, you know, the central mission of these texts is essentially to deconstruct the ancient Christian Holy Trinity.
Yeah.
So Antolihau strips away all the standard theological doctrine and reconstructs the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit as this allegorical map of the self.
A map of the self.
Right. Yeah, basically a representation of the human mind, the physical body, and subconscious energy.
Okay, let's unpack this.
Right.
He's jumping straight into, like, quantum physics.
Yeah.
And the subconscious mapping of the Trinity without any context is just, it won't make sense unless we understand the map maker himself.
No, you're totally right. We have to look at his background.
Right. We have to look at Antolihau's own journey to really understand the catalyst for this massive philosophical shift.
And his starting point is deeply, deeply entrenched in the exact tradition he eventually deconstructs.
Yeah, he grew up in the Philippines, right? Very Catholic environment.
Extremely strict Catholic environment. He actually even entered the seminary with the full intention of dedicating his life to the priesthood.
Wow, okay.
Yeah. And at first, he really thrived on the structure. Like, the discipline provided this profound sense of purpose for him.
Sure, that makes sense.
But over time, the routine of prayer began to feel kind of hollow. He notes in his essay that obedience slowly mutated into blind compliance.
Yeah. And that distinction is huge.
Yeah.
You know, between discipline and compliance. Because discipline is a choice.
Yeah, exactly.
But compliance is really just a surrender of agency. You're just doing what you're told.
Yeah, you're just going through the motions. And he actually encountered a totally different flavor of that exact same issue when his family later transitioned to become born-again Christians.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, he describes being surrounded by this fiery, intense passion for God, but he noticed this psychological trap hidden inside it. The people around him were, like, clinging so tightly to their certainty that it was actually hardening them.
Hardening them.
Yeah.
Right, because they couldn't bend.
Exactly. He observed how narratives of sin and salvation were literally being weaponized to enforce that compliance.
Wow.
Dogmatic certainty was basically functioning as a mechanism of control rather than, you know, a vehicle for spiritual liberation, which this raises an important question, right?
Yeah.
In his essay, he writes, and this is a great quote, "If a faith cannot face a question, it is not a sanctuary. It is a fragile illusion dressed in certainty."
Oh, man, a fragile illusion.
Yeah.
That is such a powerful way to put it. It kind of makes me think of inherited faith as like wearing a suit of armor that someone else forged for you centuries ago.
Oh, I like that analogy.
Right. Like when you're a child, your community straps this armor onto you to protect you from the dangers of the world. And for a season, it totally works.
It keeps you safe.
Yeah, it keeps you safe. But as you grow and as your mind expands, the armor obviously doesn't stretch.
Right. It's metal.
Yeah. It gets incredibly tight. And if the rules of your community say you are never allowed to take the armor off or, you know, even question its design,
it stops being protection.
Exactly. It becomes a cage that completely restricts your movement.
And that restriction completely stunts any genuine spiritual maturity. Antolihau recognized that he was trapped in that armor of religious labels, whether it was Catholic or born again.
Yeah.
To actually mature, he realized he had to stop looking at the labels and start examining the fruit of the belief system.
The fruit, right.
Right. He began evaluating faith through this purely practical lens. Like, does holding this specific belief actually make a person kinder?
Does it make them better?
Right. Does it generate patience? Does it expand a person's capacity to love? And if the answer was no, he basically said the doctrine was useless.
Regardless of how historical or traditional it claimed to be.
Exactly.
So if the old armor is suffocating you, you obviously have to forge something new.
You have to.
And if the old armor doesn't fit, how exactly does the author start building a new framework?
Well, that brings us to the first pillar of Antolihau's reconstructed framework, which is the father.
Okay.
In the Tryon reflection, the father is no longer, you know, an anthropomorphic deity sitting up in the clouds passing judgment.
The old guy with the beard.
Right, exactly. Instead, the father is redefined as the mastermind, the absolute purest form of source.
The source.
Yeah. He describes it as the source code of existence, and he connects this directly to the mechanisms of quantum physics.
Oh, okay. We're going into physics.
We are.
Yeah.
Because in this framework, the father represents the quantum field itself. Think of it as light particles, this fundamental non-manifest energy that basically permeates the entire universe.
Pure potentiality.
Yes.
Yeah.
It is unformed eternal awareness.
And since energy in physics cannot be created or destroyed, right?
Okay.
It only changes form. So this source is inherently eternal. But I gotta say, I want to push back on the terminology here just a little bit.
Oh, go for it.
Because Antolihau's entire journey is about finding a belief system that produces kindness and love, right? That was the whole point of leaving the dogma.
Right, right.
Yet, referring to the divine as a quantum field or, like, source code sounds incredibly clinical to me.
It does sound a bit sci-fi.
Yeah. It feels cold. Like I'm reading a server manual rather than experiencing some sort of warm spiritual awakening.
Well, what's fascinating here is I totally understand why it sounds mechanical at first glance, but consider how this reframing shifts the actual power dynamic of existence.
Okay, how say?
If God is an external king ruling from afar, humanity is basically reduced to fearful subjects, right? Begging for favors or miracles.
Yeah, that's that dynamic of separation and anxiety.
Exactly. However, if the Father is pure, unmanifested thought and intention, then the human conscious mind is not separate from the divine. Our conscious mind acts as a direct, localized conduit to this universal source. So you aren't petitioning a king anymore. You're actually utilizing your own consciousness to collapse the quantum wave function.
Drawing that potential out of the infinite field and like pulling it into physical reality.
Yes, you are an active participant.
Wow, okay, that is a massive transfer of agency. We're like these localized expressions of the universe's own mind.
Exactly.
And what I found so cool in the sources is how they anchor this vast kind of cosmic idea to a very tangible physical tradition.
The sign of the cross.
Yes, sign of the cross. So when you make the sign of the cross, the very first motion points to the head. Right. Which represents the father.
Right.
And the text highlights this fascinating detail, linking the areas of the body we touch to places where humans naturally grow hair.
Yeah. Which historically, biblically, hair is a massive symbol of power.
Like the story of
Samson. Exactly. Samson losing his hair and his power. So the head is the seat of the mind, the localized locus of that quantum power.
Right. So the physical body basically becomes the map.
It is the map. But you have to remember, a pure thought, like a particle of potential, remains completely abstract until it has a mechanism to interact with the material world.
It needs a vehicle.
Yes. It requires a vehicle, which introduces the second pillar of the Trinity, the Son.
Okay.
If the Father is the unmanifested idea, you know, the mind, then the Son is the body, the manifestation in physical form.
The bridge.
Exactly. The body acts as the critical bridge. It grounds the abstract thought of the Father and literally translates it into physical action.
Right.
And this concept radically, I mean, completely radically, reframes the narrative of the crucifixion of Jesus.
Yeah.
It steers it entirely away from traditional religious interpretations.
Yeah, because in standard Christian theology, the crucifixion is almost always taught through the lens of penal substitution, right?
Yes.
This idea of a cosmic financial transaction where Jesus dies to pay off the sin debt of humanity.
Yeah.
You know, to satisfy the wrath of God.
Right, and Antolihau rejects that transactional model entirely.
Completely throws it out.
Yeah. In the Tryon reflection, the crucifixion is analyzed as this profound philosophical act of earthly liberation. It's not a payment. It is a deliberate strike against the ruthless power of empire, against systemic corruption and false authority.
Here's where it gets really interesting to me. Because, like, how exactly does allowing yourself to be publicly executed defeat an empire? That seems counterintuitive.
Well, think about how empires maintain control.
For force.
Through the ultimate threat, the fear of death.
Right.
The physical body is vulnerable, right? And corrupt systems exploit that vulnerability to force compliance.
Oh, I see where this is going.
Right. By willingly allowing his physical body, which is the manifestation of light, to be destroyed without surrendering his truth, Jesus basically dismantled the empire's primary weapon.
He took away their leverage.
Exactly. He demonstrated that consciousness is greater than physical form. So
yeah.
The salvation offered wasn't like a VIP pass to the afterlife.
Right, right.
It was a blueprint for enlightenment in the present moment. It was an invitation to be liberated from the illusion that the physical world and its authorities hold ultimate power over the soul.
That is wild. It functions exactly like a political whistleblower in the modern era.
Yes, that's a perfect analogy.
Like, a whistleblower uncovers a massive corrupt system, and they know that releasing the truth is going to result in their own destruction.
Yeah, they know they're going to prison or losing their livelihood or worse.
But they do it anyway, publicly, absorbing the wrath of the system so that the public can finally see the corruption and be freed from that manipulation.
Exactly. So the miracle isn't some supernatural magic trick. The miracle is the human capacity to rise above the fear of physical destruction.
Embodying the sun in this framework means living your truth so completely that fear no longer dictates your physical actions.
You basically refuse to participate in the illusion of the empire.
Wow. And returning to the map of the physical body, the sign of the cross,
yeah.
The second motion moves down from the head to the lower body.
Yeah.
Right. And the text specifically notes that it points toward the reproductive organs.
Right, which represents creation.
The continuation of physical form. The dense, tangible reality of the human experience.
Exactly. So the mind conceives the potential and the body physically creates it. But there is a missing element here.
Okay, what's missing?
Well, we have the conscious thought and the physical action, right? But what drives the unseen instincts that are sort of simmering beneath both of them, what dictates the environment in which the mind and body are actually operating?
Ah, okay. And that gap is filled by the final piece of the Trinity.
The Holy Spirit.
Right. So in this allegorical map, the Holy Spirit represents the subconscious mind and our deep intuition.
Yes. And to borrow again from physics, if the Father is the particle, you know, the focused, localized point of consciousness, then the Holy Spirit is the wave.
The wave.
It is the vast, unseen, interconnected field of energy that links absolutely all things together. The text actually refers to the subconscious as the operating system of reality.
Which is such a cool modern way to phrase it. And this operating system concept leads to one of the most provocative interpretations in the entire source material.
Oh, the Adam and Eve part.
Yes. And Tully Hal takes the Genesis story, Adam and Eve eating the forbidden fruit, and he compares it to the famous red pill allegory from the movie The Matrix.
Which completely flips the traditional narrative of the fall of man.
Right. Because usually, eating the apple is portrayed as the ultimate sin that doomed humanity.
The biggest mistake ever made.
Yeah. But viewed through the lens of the subconscious operating system, consuming the fruit was actually a necessary exchange.
Yes. Humanity traded this blissful, ignorant innocence for profound insight.
They chose to wake up. They basically swallowed the red pill to see the reality of the wave, rather than just remaining blind dependents in this walled garden.
Exactly. And the physical mapping completes the picture here, too.
Oh, right. The sign of the cross.
Yeah, for the Holy Spirit, the sign of the cross moves across the shoulders. And again, the text connects this to an area of the body associated with hair and power. But psychologically speaking, the shoulders represent the burdens we carry.
The weight of the world on your shoulder.
Exactly. Our deep-seated emotions, our heavy intuition, and crucially, the weight of our ego.
The ego. Okay, so the ego is a really interesting factor here. Let me ask you this.
Sure.
If the Father represents the mastermind and our conscious logic, why does the author say that our deepest, most profound power actually resides in the Holy Spirit like the subconscious wave? I mean, logic seems like it should be the ultimate authority, right?
You would think so. Logic is incredibly powerful, obviously. But the problem is that it's frequently hijacked by the ego. Conscious effort is very often a product of self-preservation. You see, the ego is essentially a survival mechanism. It's designed to protect the physical body.
Right, keep us alive.
And it does this by creating these really rigid illusions of separation. It categorizes the world into me versus you or us versus them. Oh, I see.
So when logic is filtered through the ego, it becomes highly fearful and defensive. It justifies hoarding, conflict, control, all of that.
Oh, wow. So the conscious mind can use perfect logic to justify building walls, while the subconscious wave just intuitively recognizes that the walls are an illusion anyway.
Because everything is already connected.
Precisely.
That makes a lot of sense.
Right. When you tap into your true subconscious intuition, the Holy Spirit, you completely bypass the fearful, isolating logic of the ego.
You just go around it.
Yeah, you access this effortless state of creativity and a deep intuitive understanding of unity. You recognize that you aren't just an isolated particle fighting against the universe.
You are a wave flowing within it.
Exactly.
Okay, so we have the complete map laid out here.
Yeah.
The Father is the conscious mind, the pure light of potential.
Yep.
The Son is the physical body, the tangible manifestation.
Yes.
And the Holy Spirit is the subconscious intuition, the interconnected wave.
That is the complete Trinity.
Which is intellectually super stimulating.
Yeah.
But so what does this all mean? Like, how does viewing yourself as this Trinity change how you actually navigate your daily life on a Tuesday?
Well, Antola Howe provides this really brilliant optical metaphor to explain the practical application of the unified self. He asks the reader to imagine pure, formless, white light.
Okay.
That light represents the Father, the unmanifested source.
Right. Then that beam of pure white light strikes a glass prism.
Exactly. And the prism represents the Son, the dense physical body.
And we all know what happens when light hits a prism. When the white light passes through the physical resistance of the glass, it refracts.
Yes, it breaks apart. It shines outward as this vibrant, complex spectrum of colors and frequencies.
Like a rainbow.
Right. And that resulting spectrum is the Holy Spirit. It's the emotional resonance, the subconscious wave, the interconnected output of our lives.
That is a beautiful way to visualize it. So mm-hmm. We aren't three separate entities, like battling for dominance inside a meat suit.
No, not at all.
We are a singular, continuous process. We are eternal, conscious energy currently choosing to express itself through the resistance of a physical form.
And recognizing yourself as a continuous process completely alters your approach to personal growth.
That's so.
Well, if you believe you are merely a physical body, you might rush to accumulate as much knowledge or status as possible before you die, right? You're on a ticking clock.
Right, the rat race.
But Antolijo cautions against this rapid consumption. In his essay, he actually cites King Solomon, historically known as the wisest of men.
Right.
And Solomon wrote this rather depressing observation. Much wisdom brings much sorrow.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Taking in profound philosophical or spiritual knowledge too quickly, like trying to force your own evolution using sheer conscious logic, can severely overwhelm the soul.
Because you're shattering the ego's illusions faster than the subconscious can actually process the new reality.
Exactly. It is the equivalent of snaring directly into the pure, unrefracted white light.
It doesn't illuminate your path. It just blinds you.
It blinds you. True spiritual growth requires intentional pacing. You can't just hoard profound knowledge to win arguments on the internet or to feel intellectually superior to others.
Because that's just the ego weaponizing the light.
Exactly. You have to integrate the knowledge slowly. You must allow the light to pass through the prism of your physical actions and disperse naturally into your subconscious wave.
Which makes perfect sense when you look at how Antolijo Howe operates in his actual daily life.
Right, his restaurant.
Yeah. Because beyond writing these heavy philosophical books, he runs a place called Stone Grill Restaurant down in Leyte.
He's actively involved in community building.
Right. And he notes that nourishing the spirit and feeding people share the exact same fundamental purpose, to gather and to unify.
The restaurant basically becomes a perfect physical embodiment of his philosophy.
It really does. Like, think about the mechanics of a kitchen. You can hoard the most expensive, scientifically perfect ingredients in the world.
Which represents the pure knowledge, the conscious mind of the Father.
Exactly. But if those ingredients just sit in a cold pantry, they are completely useless.
Yep.
It is only when you actively cook the food, which is the physical labor, the body, the Son,
right,
and then share that meal with people in a warm, interconnected environment, the ways, the Holy Spirit, that the ingredients actually provide any real nourishment.
That is a phenomenal analogy. A belief system that only exists as a collection of correct facts in your head is just a cold pantry.
Exactly. You have to ask yourself, is your philosophy actually resulting in a warm meal that nourishes the people around you?
And that is the ultimate metric for any framework of belief. As Antolijo Howe realized after leaving those dogmatic structures of his youth, the value of a belief is measured by what it does to the human heart.
Not just the human intellect.
Not just the intellect, no.
And when you measure existence through that lens, the ultimate conclusion of the triune reflection kind of removes the foundational anxiety of the human experience.
It really does.
Because if we are simply light passing through a prism, what happens when the glass finally breaks? Like, what happens when the physical body fails?
Well, the sources are unequivocal on this point. Energy cannot die.
It only changes its song.
It only changes its song. The physical body fades, the fearful ego dissolves, but the underlying frequency remains. What humanity fears as death is merely a transformation.
It is the refracted light returning to its unified source.
The cycle is complete, not terminated.
We are just fragments of an eternal source, temporarily utilizing a physical body to experience the concept of separation.
Which honestly leaves us with a final vital implication to consider today.
What's that?
If your consciousness is an eternal frequency that never truly dies, then your daily interactions carry far more weight than you might realize. Every thought you have and every action you take doesn't just disappear into the past. According to the actual mechanics of the quantum field, your specific frequency is constantly collapsing the wave function of reality for everyone around you. You aren't just living a private life. You are continuously writing the source code for the collective environment. So, if you operate from the fearful logic of the ego, you are permanently injecting static into the universal field. But if you tap into the intuition of the unified self, you are actively harmonizing the frequency of the future.
That is, wow, every single moment is a chance to decide what kind of energy you are permanently embedding into the map. Are you going to stay trapped in a restrictive armor of certainty? Or are you willing to take the red pill, face the difficult questions, and deliberately choose the frequency you broadcast into the world?
Exactly.
Well, thank you for joining us on this deep dive into the map of the self. Keep questioning the borders of the world around you. Keep exploring those ancient blueprints, and we will catch you next time.